Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Hope you have a good weekend planned. We're going to try and help with Film Week coming up next hour. Our critics this week will be Claudia Puig, Peter Rayner, and Amy Nicholson. And we'll be hearing a documentary starring William Friedkin, who's the director of The Exorcist, in which he goes deep and talking about how he created what's considered to be one of the scariest films of all time, the documentary Leap of Faith. We'll also hear about the documentary Coded Bias, which looks at MIT's Media Lab and a researcher's findings there that racial, or I should say facial recognition algorithms are racially biased. We'll hear about that film coming up, as well as many others this week on Film Week. But we begin with a very real life story, of course, and that is tonight Los Angeles County is going to see additional restrictions on restaurants and other stores that are expected to close if they're non-essential by 10 o'clock. And that goes into effect statewide beginning tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. It's a statewide limited stay-at-home order in which all Californians are asked to stay home between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. unless engaged in essential services. Now, you'd still be able to go out, and if you need to go to a pharmacy late night, you could do that. You could have food delivered. There will still be that opportunity after 10 o'clock, but restaurants and bars will need to close. Breweries will need to close, and what are deemed to be non-essential businesses. With us to talk about that order, as well as other important COVID-19-related news, is Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center Professor of Medicine and Infectious Disease Specialist. Dr. Chin Hong, a very good Friday morning to you.
Thanks for having me on, Larry. Same to you.
Well, let's start with this limited stay-at-home order. This is similar to the one that we had earlier in the year, in March, except the hours are more limited, 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. Your thoughts on whether it's necessary to go to this extent to restrict businesses and movement?
Well, Larry, I think it may get to some of what Governor Newsom is trying to do by pulling on the emergency brake, as he said. But in practical terms, I'm not really sure how well it would work in California, since many of those kinds of restrictions had already been in place. So the delta in change may not achieve the desired results. For example, in the Bay Area and in San Francisco, after 10 p.m., you can't really go anywhere anyway. So by doing that, I guess the only big difference with that is that it's a metaphor, a symbol, because when you hear curfew, you think, you know, it's something austere and, you know, a symbol of how bad things are rather than achieving any, you know, change per se. You know, we can't even get alcohol after at those hours anyway in bars. So it's, you know, the appreciable change may be different than in some countries where and maybe LA is a little bit different from San Francisco, but in Europe, for example, there's so much that goes on after 10 p.m. that difference may be more noticeable then.
And, you know, it's interesting that the governor in his announcement very specifically did not use the word curfew. He called it a limited stay-at-home order. And I assume that was a very conscious framing decision on his part. Your thoughts about how this is being described?
Exactly. It's softer language for sure. And I think it's just meant to not scare people, not meant to have people rush to the grocery stores. They have already rushed to the grocery stores anyway to raid on toilet paper and bottled water in some senses, and to crowd and have, you know, the obverse effect is that people sort of crowd places just before closing time, which is something that some people have worried about. So I think, you know, how you frame it is very intentional, as he's doing.
Dr. Chin Hong, I know you're not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but what is going on with the hoarding thing? We've already been through this, and we understand the resiliency of the supply chain in the United States. What? Why are people so frightened about this?
I think that, you know, it just reflects the state of anxiety of all of us. And, of course, toilet paper, and we've said that multiple times over the months, has nothing to do with COVID, but it's just that emergency response, you know. We hear about stay at home and people want to stock up on essentials as if we're going to be, you know, in wildfire season or post-earthquake when you would need bottled water and toilet paper. But again, all it's doing is just feeding a frenzy and fear, you know, as an infectious disease doctor, fear actually has the same effect as an infection. When enough people have that anxiety and fear, it spreads to other people like wildfire. I think I was really, you know, there was also in the news this situation, this fake news that came out in Australia where somebody had said pizza boxes were contaminated with COVID. And that spread like wildfire and actually led the public authorities, health authorities, to issue a similar, you know, stay-at-home order. So I think fear is contagious, just like an infectious disease.
Yeah, our producer, Natalie Chudnovsky, raises the issue, which I think is an interesting one, that we feel powerless in this. And so to go out and to stock up on toilet paper or laundry detergent or whatever it is, it's something to do. It's a way to try and take control over something over which we have limited control.
I love that hypothesis because that's exactly right, too. You know, I think you want to maintain control. You feel powerless. We are aspiring to that life pre-COVID, and we are desperately trying to you know, control our environment as much as possible. So if it means stocking up on a family-sized big unit of Charmin, why not?
All right. We're talking with Doc, but please don't do that. We're talking with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center, professor of medicine and infectious disease specialist. It's like he's family for these past 9 months, joining us regularly on Air Talk. I know because I hear from so many of you, you feel like he's a part of your household with all his visits with us on Air Talk. We invite you to call with questions for him. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Let me just quickly go through the state limited safer at or stay at home, excuse me, order, which goes into effect tomorrow night at 10. LA County's goes into effect tonight at 10. But the statewide order for non-essential businesses that are permitted to operate indoors, so that would be retail stores, offices, personal care services, occupancy will be limited to 25% of the maximum capacity. I assume that they're using whatever the fire code limit is for that. That would, Dr. Chin Hong, you assume that's what they're using?
Yes, I assume that because, you know, whenever you enter a building, there's always that fire code with that occupancy number, and that's my assumption as well.
25% for those that are operating indoors. That's non-essential businesses. The number of patrons at outdoor restaurants, breweries, and wineries will be limited to 50% of the maximum outdoor capacity. So I was reading about one restaurant, for example, that set up tables as though there was no COVID-19. They just set up what would be the typical, you know, comfortable maximum capacity, and then closed off every other table so that they could show that 50% outdoor capacity. It made sense to me. The number of customers at outdoor card rooms, mini golf, go-kart, batting cages, limited to half, 50% maximum outdoor capacity. Services at personal care establishments may only be provided by appointment to customers wearing face coverings by the staff, face coverings for staff at all times, and any services that require the customer or the staff member to remove a face covering cannot be done. So no facials, no shaves at the barber shop. You can't do that. Face covering has to be on at all times, and those services provided by appointment only. And again, non-essential restaurants, breweries, wineries, non-essential retail establishments must close between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. Now, you can get takeout and delivery of food after 10 o'clock. There were a lot of questions about that. That will be allowed. So 11 o'clock at night, you just need something to eat and you don't want to go out to the supermarket, you can still have food delivery. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Coming up later this hour, we'll talk with the head of the California Restaurant Association, Jot Condi, who will fill us in on what their members are going through to prepare for this. And we'll take listener calls. If you're a restaurateur or an employee of a restaurant or a retail establishment deemed non-essential, I want to know how you're going to adapt to the limited stay-at-home order going into effect this weekend. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. I also wanted to ask you, Dr. Chin Hong, about Pfizer announcing this morning it's going to request emergency approval for its vaccine. So what comes next with federal oversight?
So what comes next is that the FDA has assembled a group of advisors to pore over the data. That meeting is scheduled already, actually. It's a three-day meeting, December 8th, 9th, and 10th. And on that day, they'll pore over the data and then issue, if approved, emergency use authorization. It's not a full approval because that typically takes a much longer time for vaccinations. But essentially, after that, which is expected to be approved for EUA, it could be distributed to states, and then that process could start. There's one other group that needs to look at that as well. It's the CDC advisory or ACIP group who advises on immunizations. But so those two will meet around that time. It's expected to be approved. And also, interestingly, that they chose those dates because I think Moderna will hopefully get their application in. So it'll be kind of two for the price of one, so to speak.
All right. And I know that there is the state oversight panel, but I'm presuming that if the feds vet this and give the okay, that wouldn't slow down the process very much, having the additional state layer, would it?
Yeah, no, I don't think it will slow down at all. That state layer, and it was done in a few states, including New York as well, as California, was really done to mitigate any sort of rash movement by the current political administration when it was being used or being perceived as being used for political capital. But then the FDA put in safety guardrails that were more austere or robust, and then sort of, I think those advisory boards are just more performer at this point.
All right. There's some disagreement about different types of therapies for COVID-19. The Associated Press had a good roundup story on this this morning. The World Health Organization guidelines panel advised against using the antiviral remdesivir for hospitalized patients. The WHO saying there's no evidence it improves survival or avoids the need for breathing machines. But of course, remdesivir in this country has been part of the standard of care. Government-led study here found that there were some significant benefits. So your thoughts about the World Health Organization coming out with this stance on remdesivir?
Yes, I think we're all sort of disappointed at the language that they used, which was pretty definitive from the WHO point of view in terms of saying that there was no benefit to remdesivir. And of course, there is benefit in terms of the studies that we've done in the United States, which are global studies where they were conducted from the United States, both at the NIH and from Gilead. And, you know, I think it begs us to think about whether or not mortality or death is really a robust enough outcome in COVID studies at this point, because, you know, and for example, in San Francisco and at our hospital, if our mortality rate was less than 10%, 5% in some cases, then to look for a difference in deaths is really not probably the best outcome. In fact, I really truly believe that the NIH studies were done very, very well. And what they showed was that you cut down recovery time from 11 days median to 4 days. You cut it down from about 4 to 11. So that itself would lead to appreciable benefits in the eyes of many providers. So I think that, again, focusing on mortality may not be the best issue. And again, it doesn't make sense biologically, because many of the people early on in these studies were mixed bag. And we know now that when you use an antiviral, it's probably best early on. And when you use an anti-inflammatory, which they recommended wholeheartedly, and we do as well, later on, that's really where you get the benefit of the treatment, because that's where the inflammatory phase is. And again, it doesn't really take into the point that right now we're looking at, you know, multiple modalities to get the sweet spot, not thinking of therapy as monolithic anymore. Like you think you get this drug A or this drug B. It's actually, when can we use A plus B, and when do we use one drug or the other? So these are all my initial thoughts of it. At the end of the day, I'm just worried that it's going to set up the world into the haves and the have-nots, because there'll be no pressure for price reductions globally. There'll be no pressure for generic companies to make remdesivir globally, given that the WHO has come down with this strong stance.
I hadn't even thought of that, and that's a really important point. We're going to continue with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco School of Medicine, Medical Center, noted infectious disease specialist, and part of the Air Talk team, joining us regularly multi-times a week with the latest on COVID-19. Coming up, we're going to talk with him about a face mask study in Denmark, which, at least to me, had a rather head-scratching perspective that came out of the publication of that study. I'm sure Dr. Peter Chin Hong can explain it for us. We'll come back in just 1 minute on Air Talk. Just seeing that the Toronto Raptors of the NBA have been denied permission by the Canadian government to play their games in Toronto because of COVID-19 restrictions on movement across the U.S.-Canadian border. So the thought is that the team may end up playing in Tampa, Florida, which is kind of funny. You think of all the snowbirds who go from Canada to Florida in the winter to avoid the cold weather. So the team is going to do that apparently, too. At least that's the talk, that would be the likely site where the Raptors would play their games. Right now, we're talking about the latest on COVID-19. Joining us, Dr. Peter Chin Hong. Dr. Chin Hong, we had a Danish study that was done on wearing face coverings because it was not mandated there at the time when they conducted the study. So they were able to give out masks and have a group that didn't mask, group that did mask, and it didn't show significant difference. And then they went sort of on to criticize how the study had so many problems in it, because people didn't, who were given the masks, didn't wear them uniformly or didn't wear them correctly and all. But the researchers still came away with the conclusion, well, this still shows that more people need to wear face masks, instead of just saying, well, the study didn't work and, you know, it didn't work the way we hoped and we can't make a conclusion. Your thoughts on that study?
Yes, Larry, I have many thoughts. Some of it kind of emotional, so I'll keep my emotion out of these comments.
All right.
So first of all, these are cardiologists studying an infectious disease problem from Denmark, and I love the Danish research group is quite robust anyway. They looked at a large population, which is about 6,000 people, and gave half of them, recommended that they wear half a mask, half the population wore masks, and half of the study population had regular interaction in the community. I think there are a few points to be made with this study. First of all, in this time that the study was done in Denmark, only about 5% of the population was wearing masks, which, you know, begs the question of, you know, is this really going to have any benefit when you go out into the world and hardly anyone is wearing masks? And we know actually from other data that the masks are really have population level benefit. It's, you know, sure you can have individual benefit, but if a lot of people who have asymptomatic infection are around you, then you're not really going to have as much benefit as the more people that wear them. And that's coupled with the fact that only about 46% of the folks who were in the mask-wearing group actually said they wore the mask consistently. So it's kind of like the study question is not whether or not masks prevented COVID. The study question is really, does a recommendation for mask use prevent COVID? Because you can recommend, but if you're not going to wear it at the end of the day, it's probably not going to be beneficial, especially if everybody or most people around you are not wearing the mask.
Well, and the question would be also, you know, what's the percentage of compliance with a study, you know, for people that are who actively, you know, follow what they're supposed to do to take part in the study? It's just so odd to me to even come out with a finding from something that had all the problems that did.
Yes, I know. I think it was one of those. Well, first of all, there haven't been any good randomized controlled studies with mask wearing that in humans. And it's difficult to do a randomized controlled trial, again, as evidenced by this study. So I think the Annals of Internal Medicine, who published this study, which is, you know, really prestigious journal, they published it, I think, for a reason, which is to really highlight some of the problems, because I think they address them in the editorial that accompanied the paper. So part of the reason, I think, for bringing this to light is really to, you know, again, in a opposite way, just tell us that or highlight some of the issues of how hard it is to study and why, you know, if enough of us don't wear the mask, it's probably not going to work.
Dr. Chen Hong, before you go, I have a couple of quick questions. One is from a listener asking about outdoor restaurants that, because of cold weather, have put, you know, plastic around two or three sides of pavilion-type coverings overhead, and asking, is that a problem inhibiting airflow? We had, of course, the French Laundry, apparently the room where the governor and the California Medical Association lobbyists and folks were, was had a roof over. It was closed in on three of four sides. Are those safe places for people to dine? Is that really outdoors?
I know. You might be outdoors. I mean, theoretically, my house is outdoors, except it has four walls and a roof. So I guess there is a, you know, gradation of how enclosed you could be. And, you know, there, you know, I've seen a restaurant, for example, that pretty much was like a restaurant that was enclosed outdoors because they had all four walls intact and a covering. But, you know, I still think you would decrease the risk even if you have one of the walls open, and that's kind of what some of the CDC guidance has been, you know, at least having one wall. If you have two walls open, you're going to probably get more ventilation. So, you know, in these cool days, as at least if you don't have a complete all four walls covered, you're still going to derive some benefit, particularly with depopulation and not having it being crowded.
All right. And finally, a question on surface contact. At this point, what's the thinking about the possibility of people getting COVID-19 from, you know, surfaces? We have all this cleaning and all that goes on. Is that important?
Not as important as we used to think early in the pandemic. It probably is more important for other viruses that you can get that cause the common cold, which are more likely to be spread by touching. But for COVID, there have been studies subsequently that show that when you do culture things on surfaces, you might pick it up as being positive on a test, which is a PCR test, which is really just fragments of the virus. But when you culture it, they're not alive. So I think in general, I would use this opportunity to tell folks not to think of a laundry list of things to do, but to just focus and to keep your eyes on the prize, which is, now I say the four W's, which is wear your mask, number one, two, and three, wash your hands, wash your distance, and the fourth thing is watch the wind. So we've learned more about ventilation, but you notice that surfaces are not really in my top list.
All right. Dr. Chen Hong, you have a terrific weekend. As always, we so appreciate you being with us on Air Talk.
Thanks so much, Larry. You too.
Thank you, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, joining us, UC San Francisco Medical Center and infectious disease specialist.